When I was in graduate school, in my mid-20s, I had a class on it was called the Christian Spiritual Tradition. And one of the assignments that the professor gave us was to write a X number of word essay. I don't remember. It was fairly long. But to write the essay on answering one question that sounded deceptively simple. Who are you? And the grade was, of course, not going to be based on just objective facts. But it was going to be based on the thoughtfulness and profound basis of your essay. And also the fact that it may contain many levels of answering that question. I thought about that essay for a long time afterwards. Because the way you answer that question says a lot about how you picture yourself. See, each one of us inside has a kind of a picture, a self-image. And what he was doing was getting us to describe our self-image. And he was looking for the level of that we would answer it by. That memory in my mind is linked to another memory, a memory that I have probably shared with you several times, because it said something so profound to me. And that memory occurred about 15 years ago. I was here. I was called to celebrate an all-school mass at a Catholic school. And it was a grade school, grades 1 or kinder through 8, or pre-K, or I can't remember, kinder through 8. And what happened at that mass, and what I had to respond to was... what came out of my mind was something that I've remembered ever since. I think one of the readings was from the book of Ecclesiastes. And you may remember the significant part that everybody knows in the book of Ecclesiastes is there is a time to be born and a time to die, a time to let go and a time to grasp and a time for this and a time for that. Some of you older people may remember it as part of the song by the birds called Turn, Turn, Turn. But you younger people have no idea what I'm talking about. But when I asked the kids, because I was trying to figure out, how am I going to handle this reading? Because I had decided to focus on it. And I decided to handle it by asking, my ultimate desire was, so what is the purpose of life? What should you focus on in the purpose of life? And I used the example of a merry-go-round. And the example is a very simple one. But it was basically this. I said to the, and it was, must have been 800 kids in that room, all the way from pre-K, all the way through eighth grade. And I asked the question, how many of you have ever ever gone on a merry-go-round? And of course, pretty much 90% of the school raised their hands. And then I said, well, let me ask you, how many of you really enjoyed it? And this time, not so many, but quite a few, and it was fairly, you know, spread out. Then I asked the final question. I said, how many of you would like to live permanently on a merry-go-round? And this time it was very curious, because it was only the little kids, the tiny little kids, the pre-K and the K, and maybe the first graders, who raised their hands. I looked over at the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Not a single hand was raised. But all of them were in the little kids. And so I went to the little kids, and I said, why? Why do you want to live there? Oh, it's so much fun, but basically. Do you know the horses go up and down, and the music, and everybody's smiling, and we go round and round, and we have a lot of fun. And then I went over to the 8th graders, and I asked a few of them, why do you not want to live on a merry-go-round? And the basic thesis was, it's boring. It doesn't go anywhere. And the music, after a while, will drive you crazy. And the horses, they never stop going up and down and up and down. And that memory has, I've never forgotten it. Because what it said to me was that the younger you are, the less profound the answer to the question, what does it take to satisfy you and who are you, the less profound. The younger you are, the less profound your answer is. And I'm not talking necessarily about the younger you are chronologically, because I've met some 50-year-olds that are at least 12 or 13 or maybe even 5 or 6. The younger you are psychologically, the less problematic the question will be, because you're satisfied with less. The 8th graders needed a greater sense of direction. They weren't looking for fun. They weren't looking for easy entertainment. They needed a sense of, a little more sense of the purpose of what they were doing. And it has struck me ever since that the older psychologically you get, the more the question of the direction of your life will come into play. Not only the direction of your life. Because see, what happens in human life, I almost see it like an onion or other plants or fruits that have layers. You start with being very well satisfied with the outer layer. But then the outer layers either become unsatisfactory and or they rot or they get cut off. And so you're forced to go to a deeper layer to answer the question, who are you? And even as you get as an adult and you think your life is settled, it really isn't. Because you have yet to experience the layers that you think are permanent are really not. Because, for example, if you think, well, my marriage, well, your marriage will end. I don't think necessarily in divorce, but somebody's going to die first. Your marriage will end. Your children, you identify as, who am I? Well, I'm a mom. You're always going to be in a sort of way, but you're not always going to be needed. You're going to be appreciated, maybe, but not needed. So if you identify yourself with that, you're going to be in trouble because that layer is going to go away. Your job, Sooner or later, you will retire. And you won't have your job. For me, I am, I have my job as a pastor, as a priest. And an aspect of that will go away. You know, the day I'm in a retirement home. All of that, all of it, sooner or later, all those layers will peel away. And you're going to be asking yourself at a deeper and deeper center of the core of, you're going to be asked, who am I? Where did I come from? Because immediately, when you get to the deeper levels or the inner core, you will begin asking what are essentially the religious questions that you didn't ask yourself before, because you were satisfied at a younger age with more superficial answers. Even when you're in your 30s or 40s, I find myself right now at 66 years old. I think differently than when I was in my 40s. And I thought when I was in my 40s, I was mature. And I have no doubt, as I continue to experience moving into older age, that I will have to peel some of the other layers that I still cling to and I think are permanent. And so you will begin to answer the question, who am I? But you begin to ask related questions, like subset questions. Where did I come from? Oh, sooner or later, your genealogy won't really matter that much. It's all human DNA. But you'll be asking, so why have I lived? Not only where did I come from, where am I going? Because you're going to experience your body breaking down. If you haven't yet, welcome to some of the pleasures of old age. You'll begin to experience that. And as you experience yourself falling apart, you begin to say, so where am I going? And then you'll ask the question, as you look back, did it mean anything? Or was life just one damn thing after another? Did it mean anything? Oh, it's interesting, because when you were younger and you were living it, that question may have crossed your mind, but it really didn't matter. You were very busy about your daily life, about your career, about things that gave you purpose at that time. But those things are gone. Did it mean anything? And how do I go forward with the time I have left? What do I do? What do I do? And how do I make decisions? What is of value? What is worthwhile? And all those questions will constantly cross your mind. I find it always fascinating, because whenever we talk about coming to Mass or doing anything like that, we always use the word worship. We're worshiping God. And another one of those echoes that I have in my head, tattooed in my head, and I have no tattoos physically, but several in my brain, but I attempted to get a few. Anyway, things that I find interesting. Worship. Have you ever thought, I'm sure I've said this to you, but it bears repeating. Where does that word come from? Because every time I use the word worship, I always imagine some dude, you know, standing before an idol or, you know, some sort of sacred image going, oh, like that, up and down, bowing. That's not worship. Have you ever thought this? I'm a fan, and you all know it. I'm a fan of etymologies. the study, not entomology. Okay, entomology is the study of insects. Etymology is the study of the structure of words. And the word worship is quite simple. It's really quite simple. It's the suffix, the latter part of the word, ship, is the art or practice of anything. So, for example, you may have penmanship, writing good, craftsmanship, sportsmanship, and you could go on with all the different ships. Because what you're saying is the art or practice of what went before. So you have here, worship. So what does the W-O-R stand for? It's a very simple, actually, part of a word. It stands for the word worth. So you're actually worth shipping. So what is worth shipping? Acknowledging what's worthwhile and what isn't. Because you see, in all of our lives, at every stage of human life, you have a different hierarchy of worth. Now, it's not necessarily your conscious one. It's the one that is really you live your life by. So I had a retreat director one time. In my retreat, he asked me to bring in my MasterCard receipts for the last 12 months, my checkbook, because he made me do a reflection on what was I really spending my time and my money on, because he argued that that's a significant part of what you worship. Because what you're doing is you're saying, okay, I pick this over this. Okay? And that's different at every stage in your life. And so you continue to answer throughout your life, consciously or unconsciously. You continue to answer the question, who am I? And every time there's a major change in your life, either a health crisis or kids leaving for college or somebody dies, something major, consciously or unconsciously, you have to re-answer it. And a layer has been peeled off. So, by this time, I hope you're asking yourself, thank you so much, Father, for this wonderful reflection. But what are you talking about? And why are you talking about this? Well, I'm talking about it because today is the feast day of All Saints. And because tomorrow we celebrate All Souls. Now, what does that have to do with it? The Feast of All Saints, of course, it is a recognition of all of the men and women who have been canonized as saints. Now, before you get some kind of a weird imagination, the word canonized does not mean shot out of a cannon. Okay? The canon, if you didn't know this, a canon is that which is proper to a particular list. So, for example, there are people who talk about the canon of Western literature. So, what is that? It's the literature that belongs to the best that we can recall of all the history of the Western world. That is the canon. The canon of Scripture are the books that belong to the Bible. They were chosen. The Bible didn't drop out of the sky. They were actually chosen around between the 3rd and 5th and 6th centuries by the church. By the way, the Bible didn't bring about the church. The church created the Bible. It's our book. We wrote it. Okay? With God, of course. But ultimately, what's happening is that when you worship, you're telling yourself what matters to you. And of course, by the way, that coming to Mass is your reminder on a weekly basis that God has to be first. Now, whether it's there or not, actually, it doesn't matter. Sometimes when you push to go to church, you are guilty about coming to church. You do so because, well, I got to, but it forces you to once again reevaluate your hierarchy of worship. And what the saints are telling us, and the canonized saints, the saints that have belonged to the list of the saints that we are given to imitate, because that's what canonized saints mean. It's the list of the saints that the church originally recognizes as being examples for us. There's many other saints. My mom and dad, who are dead, both are, I believe, I understand, saints. But they're not canonized. And so, today as we celebrate All Saints, it's part of the core layer of the onion. And it's there to remind you that as all the layers begin to peel out, that, if you can look at that icon, and it's just an artist's rendition, that you had better be part of that crowd. Because that crowd that is pictured on that icon, which has all kinds of saints and people on the earth. Notice that there are people on the earth that have not died. That's more all souls. And the people in heaven, which is all saints. And they're all gathered around the cross. And on top of the cross, if you'll notice, is the dove, the Holy Spirit. What All Saints is saying to you is, there's going to come a time when your onion will be peeled to such an extent that who am I will be answered by, are you in that crowd or not? Your relationship with God. Because let me tell you, the day you're dying, or the moment you die, all your other identities, you've reached the center of the onion. And all of your other identities are gone. And you find yourself at the center facing God. And God will look at you and say, who are you? Who have you become? Who have you chosen? How did you answer that question? By how you lived and what you have chosen. And so the top layer up there, those saints that are in heaven, are part of that crowd. That's the final destination, folks. That's the final destination. You may have other destinations at the level of your life. I certainly do, and you do too. But those are layers of the onion that will peel away eventually. Eventually, you're going to reach the core. And by the way, if you're not part of that crowd, you're in deep doo-doo. Okay? You're in deep doo-doo. Because it means that you have rejected the core identity of who God called you to be. And the church says you can actually have a choice in living in permanent and eternal self-rejection. We call it hell. Okay. But don't think of hell as sitting there going, oh, I'm burning. No, don't do that. Hell is living eternally in self-hatred. The hatred of your true self, of who you are. Because who you are, at its core, is who God made you to be. And to live, to reject it, and you can. Well, that's what the teaching in hell. We don't know if there's anybody in hell, by the way. We can say that there are canonized saints, but there are no canonized damned people. You know why? Because the church always hopes that every human being, no matter who, even Judas or Hitler or whatever, that we hope that no one is in hell. We hope. We don't know. But we know that the possibility is there for each of us. And so that's why we're celebrating All Saints. Because what we're remembering is, folks, that's the destination. That's the core of the onion. Are you going to be in that crowd? And why tomorrow are we celebrating All Souls? Because what we're saying is, those of us, those of our brothers and sisters who have died, are also hopefully part of the saints, but so are we. We are one giant procession moving through history. Age upon age, a group is born and a group dies. And how do you answer the question, who am I? At each stage of your life. So, as proper, as typical, I have absolutely no ending to this homily. So, I will just, having hopefully made my point, I will shut up.